This discussion starts with a maramakam that Donny sent to me a couple of weeks ago. It's a Baal Turin that connects Parshas Chayesara with Parshas Toldos. The last words of Parshas Chayesara, talking about Yishmael, says, Al Pnei Chol Achav Nafal, tells about the children of Yishmael and where they settled. And then the Parsha ends with the words, Al Pnei Chol Achav Nafal, which in the Pshutish HaMikra means that they settled in a wide geographic area. But it's interesting that the Torah uses the word Nafal to describe that settling. Then Parshas Toldos begins Ela Toldos Yitzchak. So the Baal Turim says that at the time of Al Pnei Chol Achav Nafal, meaning when the Bnei Yishmael will have their Nefila, then it'll be Yitzmach Mashiach ben David, who is from the Toldos of Yitzchak. That's the Smichos of Ela Toldos Yitzchak. Now the that's some idea that the Smicha of Mashiach ben David is connected with the Nefila of Bnei Yishmael. It comes from a Medrash Yalkut Shemoni in Parshas Lech by the Bris Bein Abasarim. The Baal Turim is connecting it with these words and the Smichas HaPsukim. But the idea that Smichas ben David, that with that Lashon, Smichas ben David is associated with the Nefila of Bnei Yishmael is mentioned in Chazal in this Medrash in Lech Lecha. And the Baal Turim says it over here at the end of this parasha. Now, it's a very unusual maramakan. Both the Baal Turim and the Medrash that he's coming from, it's sort of contrary to the conventional wisdom. The more mainstream maramakanites really seem to put a different nation in that role. You have in the Pesukim at the beginning of Parashas Toldos that when Rivka was pregnant with two twins, so she was told by the Navi, Ula'im Mila'im Yamatz, that, which again, the Pshut HaShemekah means one nation will become stronger than the other. But the Gemara Megillah Daf Vav says that these two nations will constantly be overpowering one another. Kishazek kom zen neifel. Yushalayim v'Kesaria, right, which represented the Roman presence in Eretz Yisrael, which was considered a hemshech of Edom, which is Esav. On that, the Gemara says, Kishazek kom zen neifel. The pasuk, really the most explicit pasuk on this topic, would be the pasuk in Ovadia that we say every day, Va'olu Moshim Bahar Tzion, Lishpoit Es Har Esav, V'Hisal Hashem Amulcha. That what's the Melchama that brings to the ultimate Geula is with the defeat of Esav, right? Well, Lishpoit Es Har Esav. So it's really the showdown that seems to be most connected with the ultimate geula, with the end of days, is really the showdown against the Bnei Esav. Over here, this Baal Turim is giving a different perspective, that there's a different battle or conflict, which also may have relevance, lots of love. Again, you have Maror Mekaymes and Chazal to each one. But what these Maror Mekaymes are suggesting is that the relevant battle for ushering in the Achas HaYamim is against the Bnei Yishmael, not against the Bnei Esav. So in that sense, it's a very interesting and a little bit of an unusual Maror Mekaymes. So in this debate, is it Yishmael, is it Esav? So let's introduce the characters. Who do we mean? We know who we mean when we talk about Bnei Yisrael. The Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are still very clearly identified, even if over the course of history, some things have changed. It used to be 12 Shvatim, and a good part of that got lost, but there's still very clearly a nation that identifies as, and is clearly be shown to be, the Toldos of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What about these other figures? Yeshua, we have Ma'amar Chazal, and Psukim, that talk about a future battle with Yishmael and a future battle with Esav. So Yishmael, everybody, you know, identifies with Arabs. It's interesting that for a long time, they were not, there was no significant Yishmael role in Jewish history. Through most of the times of Tanakh, the Bnei Yishmael are not a particularly important player in Eretz Yisrael. They weren't really near Eretz Yisrael. They settled in Arabia. Right? What nowadays is Saudi Arabia. Saudi is a modern term, but it was always called Arabia, the Arabian Peninsula. And they weren't really so, you know, when you read the Psukim in Navi about the battles around Eretz Yisrael, the Bnei Yishmael were not particularly connected with that. And then in the times of Chazal, when the Yidden were living in Eretz Yisrael, and in Bavel, again, they weren't really interacting with the Bnei Yishmael. It changed when, it's a little bit ironic how this came about. When Yishmael first became a relevant player in Jewish history was when they adopted the Muslim Israel. Religion. It was with the coming of Muhammad. And very surprisingly, when we really first met, it was a great Yeshua for Klal Yisrael. They were real heroes in Jewish history. Because the Yidden in Bavel, they had been in Bavel, you know, through the whole Tekufa of the Talmud Bavli, the terror world was centered in Bavel, and it was a pretty good time in Jewish history, even though the Gemara says that really the Tekufa of the Amorim could be broken into two halves. There was the good old days, Mikami da Asi Chavri la Bavel, and then it got worse, Labasar da Asi Chavri la Bavel. But even so, throughout the Tekufa of the Amorim, the yeshivas were open, and there was Surah, there was Pampadisa, and they were being Marbitz Torah, and Torah was flourishing, and Talmidim were coming and learning in the yeshivas, and the Jewish community in Bavel was strong. After the Chasimus HaTalmud, in the 500s of the Common Era, there was a 100 years war, which was a very terrible time for the Jews. There was the Malchus and Bavel came under attack by the Byzantines, who were coming from, you know, that Turkey. Was a Christian empire, who were coming from Turkey and really also from Eretz Yisrael, because these were the early Christians. And they had a very strong sin of Yisrael. The Malchus and Bavel was fighting against them, and although they had previously been tolerant of their Jews, but once they were in this unending war cycle, so that made them very, I guess the word is xenophobic, and then they turned against any outsiders among them, so then they were very bad to the Jews. And on top of that, just the fact that living in a war zone is awful, even if nobody's particularly hostile to you. So I hear this was about 100 years that Bavel was a war zone and all the sides were hostile to the Jews. It became very, very bad. The yeshivas were closed down. The yeshiva of Surah, the yeshiva from Padisa were closed down. The Reish Galusa, you read about it in the Gemara, how there was the political leader of the Jews was called the Reish Galusa. Sometime during the 500s, I don't think it's known exactly when, the Reish Galusa was assassinated and was not replaced. The whole community really was in a shambles. And that was during the 500s. And then in the early 600s, that's when Muhammad came along. Now Muhammad is in Arabia, and he introduces his new religion, his monotheistic religion, and he attracts a lot of followers with his false prophecies, and he teaches his followers that it's very important to conquer, or that there are people of the sword, and they have to conquer their neighbors to make sure that everybody accepts their religion. And by the time Muhammad died, around the year 630, the whole Arabian Peninsula was under their control, was more or less adherents of the new religion. And then they decided they're going to continue this worldview that the more territory you conquer, the better it is. So they wanted to continue conquering. Now, if you're on a peninsula, so that means by definition there's only one way you could go, right? They can't go east, they can't go west, they can't go south, because that's all the water. The only place to go is north. What's directly north of Arabia? On your map today, it's Iraq. That's Bavel. That's where all the Jews of the world, that was the main center of Judaism in the world. And that's what they did. They went and they swept into Bavel. And this war that had been going on for 100 years without really producing any clear winner got ended very quickly in a matter of, I don't know if it was days or weeks or what, but very quickly the Muslims basically taught them how to fight. And they were a much more powerful army than the other two armies. They swept them all away. They set up Bavel as the new center of their empire. And all of a sudden, there was a new sheriff in town. The Jews of Bavel, the Jews were where they always were. They were in Bavel. But all of a sudden, there was a new boss. And this new boss was much better for the Jews. The Muslims have built into their rules that there's a status called a dhimmi, which means the non-Muslims, and there are rules, you know, obviously they're second-class citizens. This is not a democracy with freedom of religion. If you're not Muslim in a Muslim land, you're a second-class citizen, but with protections and with rights, certain extra taxes that you have to pay, but they're okay with it. The Reish Galusa was reinstated, the yeshivas were built up again, and the Torah in Bavel became very strong. That was the Tekufa of the Gaonim, when the Yidden were centered in Bavel under the Muslims, and it was a good time for the Jews. And then the Muslims continued their expansion and they built a tremendous empire. They went east and they conquered all those territories that Aryam Azad, their name then was Stan, Afghanistan and Pakistan and Turkmenistan and Tajikistan and Uzbekistan and some of the others. Those were all the areas that the Muslims conquered in the 700s and 800s. And they, more importantly for us, they went west and the whole Middle East, including Eretz Israel, and what they call the Maghreb, that's the whole North Africa, and even going as far as Spain, that whole territory came under Muslim rule. And what happened? The Jews, who were living under the Muslims in Babel, and they liked it under the Muslims, it was good for them, and now the Muslims created this huge territory that was all under their control, so Jews started to spread out over that whole territory. And then you had major Jewish communities developing in all of those areas, including as far away as Spain. That's really the origin, or at least it's the beginning of the prominence of the Jews of Spain, is because the Muslims came there and kashered it for the Jews. So that's when the Jews started to have shaykhis with the B'nai Yishmael. Until then, really, B'nai Yishmael was not a relevant player in Jewish history. So in Jewish history, the B'nai Yishmael really means Islam, even though for a couple thousand years, they were Obdi Kachavim Mazalites. But when Muhammad came along, he taught them about monotheism, which the Rambam, you know, credits him. He says that they actually got it right. It's a real monotheism. It's a religion that believes in one God who's Bari Shemayim Va'aretz. And under those circumstances, they started to have a lot of shaykhs with the Jews. Most of the Jews of the world were living as their subjects and were living pretty well, relatively speaking, for Jews in Galus.
Do we have numbers?
Good question. I can only say that. I don't know. I would imagine that probably historians have estimates, although I don't know how they get them. They probably are, but I don't know. Now, what about the B'nai Esav? So that's a little bit harder. There's certainly nobody today that calls themselves the people of Esav. But the general, you know, traditional approach is, and the Gemara already connects Rome with Edom. Edom is Esav, right? That's last week's parasha, right? That when he saw the Adam Hazan, he said he wants to eat this, so I'll conquer my Edom. So Esav is Edom. Edom, so there's a nation. Even in Tanakh, you don't really have a nation called Esav, but you have a nation called Edom, and the Pasuk says right at the beginning of the story that Esav who Edom. And then in the Gemaras, the Gemara connects Malchus Roimi with Edom. It's not so clear why they made that connection, what that's based on. That would be an interesting discussion. But that much is already clear in the Gemara. The Malchus Roimi, again, the Gemara Megillat Avav, for example, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Beis also connects Malchus Roimi with, you know, the Malchus Roimi that was current in the times of Chazal with the Malchus Edom that's talked about in Tanakh. That's one. Okay, so that's the Roman Empire. That represents Esav. But you have that there's supposed to be some future victory over Esav, but there's nobody called Esav, nobody called Edom. There isn't really much of anybody called Rome nowadays. I mean, there is still a city called Rome, but it's not a major power in the world. The Roman Empire was already overthrown a long, long time ago. So any discussions about Nevuahs that have to do with Esav and Edom, how are they in the sky nowadays? So the traditional approach that Barbanel talks about this, I think, Barichas, but in the Ramban also, there's some allusions to this. The Ramban in his Sefer HaGeula, which is like one of the small, obscure works of the Ramban, he mentions this, that although the Roman Empire is gone, it's not a major force in the world anymore, but there is one very significant lasting effect of the Roman Empire. Because the Roman Empire, what was their religion? So originally, of course, they were pagan. They were the Chachamim Mazalites. I mean, we know a lot about the their mythologies. They worshipped all sorts of funny things. And certainly they were not Christian originally. They were anti-Christian. They killed, right? They killed Yeshu. They were the enemies of Christianity. But that, okay, so that was in the year zero, right, when Christianity was, or, I mean, there was no year zero, but I mean, whatever, at the beginning of the Common Era, when Christianity was beginning, the Roman Empire was anti-Christian and they were pagan. But that changed. In the fourth century, there was an emperor, or Caesar, called Constantine, and he converted to Christianity. And he made that into the official religion of the Malchus. And then a large part of the Roman Empire converted to Christianity. And that made Christianity the dominant religion of the world, certainly of the Western world. You know, forget about China and other places like that. But of the Western world, Christianity was definitely the dominant religion by the time the Roman Empire fell. The Roman Empire fell, but this effect still remained, that the Western world is associated with Christianity, that's because of the Roman Empire. So that's the legacy of Malchus Roimi, which is Edom, which is Esav. So who's the Esav nowadays when we talk about the battle between Yisrael and Esav? It seems to be the Christian world. That's the way the Ramban and the Abarbanel and others explain this. So you have Yishmael, and we have, right, we started with a Medrash and Lechacha that talks about Mashiach being connected with the downfall of Yishmael. You have Yishmael, and that seems to be the Muslim world. And you have the Gemara Megillah that talks about the ultimate Geula being connected with the downfall of Esav. And what's Esav? That's the Christian world. And over the last 1,500 years, the Jews have, for the most part, almost exclusively been the guests of one of these two worlds, the Muslim world and the Christian world. Now the Christian, so the Muslim world we talked about, we said that from the beginning of Islam, they, you know, about 15 years after they got started, they took over the Jewish world, and then Jews have been living under the Muslims ever since. The Christians, it's a little bit trickier. Of course, originally, Christianity started in the Jewish world. Yeshu was Jewish, and he started in Eretz Yisrael, and his disciples were Jewish. But then the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed a few decades later, and the Jews were mostly taken out of Eretz Yisrael. The Christians remained, and then the Christians eventually settled in Europe, and where the Jews were really, for the main body of the Jewish people was not living among the Christians. For the next, let's say, roughly 700, 800, 900 years, there weren't too many Jews living among the Christians, the exception being in Italy. There was a community in Italy. Italy was always Christian, but that was not such a major part of the Jewish world. When it really changed was when Ashkenaz began. Now, how did Ashkenaz begin? It's a very interesting origin story of Ashkenaz. This is brought down in the Rekeach. And I think that's the earliest source, but then others from also, there's a story that the old Ashkenazim tell that one of the kings from Northern Europe, when we talk about Ashkenaz, we really mean Northern Europe, France, Germany, England. That was Ashkenaz. In the times of the Rishonim, France, Germany, England was Ashkenaz. There were no Jews that far north. And then in the 800s or so, there was a king, he's called HaMelech Karl. Now, I remember from studying global history in high school that there was somebody called Charlemagne, and then all the kings of his dynasty, he I think was in the 700s, so from the way that it could be that they meant him, but then the years would be a little bit off. It's more likely that they meant one of his descendants because everybody in that dynasty was called Charles, so they were known by their nicknames like Charles the Fat and Charles the Bald. Those were some of the Melech Karls that they could be referring to. So there was a Melech Karl who got in touch with a Melech in Italy and said, I want to do a trade. The foreign relations here, you have a resource that I want, we have resources that you want, let's do a trade. What's the resource that Italy had that the Melech Karl wanted in Northern Europe? Jews. I heard that you have something in your malchus called Jews and they're good for the economy. So I want to import some. So I'll pay you for it. history doesn't record what he paid, but, you know, probably sent down some heads of cattle or something like that, you know, some resource that he had to export, and he imported a few Jewish families. The most prominent family in the group was the Kleinemus family. There was a Rabbeinu Kleinemus, who was the leader of the clan, and it's called the Kleinemus family because that's a repeating name in the family. And they were brought north and put into the city of Mainz on the Rhine River in Germany. That was the original Ashkenaz community in, I think, the 800s. 800s of the Common Era. And then that, you know, that community, obviously, you know, they multiplied. And as they were successful, some more Jews from Italy came and joined them. And pretty soon it was exploding, and it became, from Mainz, they moved to... There were three cities along the Rhine River, Speyer, Vermeisa, and Magentia. Mainz is Magentia. Those are the three cities that we talk about in the Kines and Tisha B'Av that were hit by Bishnas Tatnu, by the First Crusade. But those were the first three cities, and then they spread elsewhere in Germany, and then from Germany they went to France. In the times of Rashi, France became the more dominant part of the, meaning a little bit further west, became the stronger part, and they spread to England also. And that was the origin of the Jews of Ashkenaz, and that's when the Jews were reintroduced to the Christian world. Until then, there were really almost no Jews living in the Christian world, but the Ashkenazi experience, almost by definition, was Jews living in the Christian world.
Sorry, what country were they in before they went to Germany?
Italy.
Italy?
It's interesting, you know, nowadays we talk about, you know, if you need to categorize Jews, which maybe it's better if we don't do, but Lamaisa, there are some boxes that we use and labels that we use. So there's categories of Sfaradim and Ashkenazim. And how do you, what's really the meaning of those terms? How do you decide who's called what? What's the definition of the terms? You could say, you know, people that, you know, that eat couscous are Sfaradim, and people that eat herring are Ashkenazim. But what's the real, you know, more scientific definition of it? So it goes back to, let's say, around 1,000 years ago, right, when these communities were becoming, really when Babel was declining and other communities were becoming more prominent. So at that time, you had Jews that lived in the Muslim world and Jews that lived in the Christian world. Those that, and those worlds were very separate. They were really cut off from each other culturally and you know, in lots of ways. And so they really developed very separately from one another. So the Jews that lived in the Muslim world at that time are the Sephardim. And the Jews that lived in the Christian world are the Ashkenazim. That's really the definition of the terms. Even though it's not so consistent, it gets a little tricky because, of course, later on, right, most notably Spain. Spain flips. Spain, everybody, you know, knows of Spain in the times of the Spanish Inquisition, and that was a Christian, that whole episode was a story with the Christians, and those are Sephardim. But Spain only became Christian in the 1200s. In the 1000s, which is really when these terms were Shtel Davek, it was completely Muslim. It was controlled, it was part of the Muslim Empire. Ibn al-Rahman was the dynasty over there. So the definition of Sephardim was those Jews that lived under the Muslims, and the definition of Ashkenazim was those Jews that lived under the Christians. The Muslims we identified with Bnei Ishmael, and the Christians with Bnei Esav, which means that the debate that we started with about is the ultimate Achras Hayamim connected with Bnei Ishmael, Bnei Esav, it almost becomes like a partisan machlekes over here. It's really like, is it telling on the Sfaradim, is it telling on the Ashkenazim? Okay, well, nowadays, you know, Mashiach hasn't come yet, and nowadays the worlds have become merged and blended, so I guess it no longer takes that form. Now everybody's involved in whatever, wherever the Muhammad's going to be. But that's really, historically, that's the way that this would have played out, because the Ashkenazim were living among the Bnei Esav. By definition, that's what it meant to be Ashkenazi, and the Sephardim were living among the Bnei Ishmael. And one just interesting point to take note of is, before we get back to what I'll call, let's say, the sugya of you know, this debate about what is the real Malchama v'Achas Hayamim. But in going over the history, I think one important point to make is that, here we said that for the last, let's say, 1,000 to 1,500 years, the Jews have lived either as, you know, in Gullus among the Christians or in Gullus among the Muslims, probably, the vast majority of the time, probably by about 90% to 10%, it's been better off among the Muslims than among the Christians. The Muslims were much better hosts, or it would be better to say, more correct to say that the Christians were much worse hosts than the Muslims were. Like I said, the Muslims, they had this status called the Dhimmi, and the Jews were tolerated as such, and they, you know, they weren't honored. Although, you know, there were times like what they call the Golden Age in Spain, where the Jews really ruled the country. But that, let's say, that was a little bit exceptional. But even when it wasn't like that, they were more or less allowed to do their thing. They didn't have nearly the kind of persecution and oppression and massacres as the Jews in Europe had, the Ashkenazim Jews that were living among the Christians, starting with the Crusades, Shnas Tatnu, that was 1096, and straight through, really like without let up, from there almost in, you know, until the Holocaust, there would be a little bit of a respite, but one after another of major massacres that and blood libels, which was a purely Christian invention, and so many things and the expulsions, right? All the expulsions were from the Christian world. That the Jews among the Christians had it much, much worse than the Jews among the Muslims.
We don't have any halakhic writings from the Jews who went east.
Right, I don't know. Very little, if any. Depends how far east. Iran is east. Now, that you do have, but further east than that, not that I know of. Not that I know of.
The Silk Route, I think.
Okay.
In high school.
Okay. Now, there have been some exceptions to this, right? I mean, the times of the Rambam were an exception. In the times of the Rambam, most of the Muslim world was taken over by the tribe called the Almohads. The Almohads were very, very intolerant they were very much like ISIS. Their Muhammad was really against the governments in the Muslim world that they felt weren't strict enough about oppressing the Jews, and naturally whenever they took over, so they made it completely intolerable for the Jews. They were very bad. And the other most notable exception would be the Tkufa that we're living in, us and our parents and grandparents, really the last, I guess, 78 years, I guess we could say pretty precisely. Up until 1945, obviously no one could say that the Muslim world was worse than the Christian world, but starting from that time and on, the vast majority of Sinas Yisrael in the world has been from the Muslim world, not from the Christian world. So that's the world that we've, you know, grown up in, that we live in, and obviously that makes a ratio.
They both do a pretty good job.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. In the last
75
years,
they take a break, and the other one's picking
up. All right, okay. But this tekufa, I think, has definitely been a tekufa where the main Sinas Yisrael has been Yishmael and not B'nai Esav. In fact, I would say that the B'nai Esav of the Christian world, it's really been their best time, their best behavior ever. Has been these last 78 years.
Didn't the Pope apologize?
Yes, that's right. In the 1960s, there was actually a formal retraction of the blaming the Jews for killing their God.
Besides the UN.
But we're talking about religion.
That's largely because of the Muslims. That is largely because the Muslims have so many countries that. The
Christians love Israel.
But many do, right? The Protestants, for the most part. Okay, so now if we come back to the that's a little bit of the background of introducing the characters in the story. Now coming back to this question of how are we supposed to view the Melchama v'Achras Hayam, and what are we supposed to expect of it? So really, what the Shaila you think should be totally on the main Maromakim at least should be the visions in Daniel. In Daniel, there are visions of Arba Malchiyos. And those Malchiyos are very connected in the Psukim with the loss of Lavi, with the arrival of Mashiach. Who are the Arba Malchiyos? So the vision describes four Chayos, and each Chaya is identified with another Malchus. And the way Chazal typically describe it, in a number of Midrashim, is that the four Malchiyos are Bavel, then Paras, or Paras Umadai, maybe as one, and then Yavan, and then Edom. But then along came the Ibn Ezra. And the Ibn Ezra, his main discussion about this is, I think, on the Pesukim in Daniel. I never saw it over there, but it comes up also on the Pesukim in Parashas Balak, and that's where the Ramban responds to him, and that's how I became familiar with it, through the Ramban and Parashas Balak. The Ibn Ezra says that, I don't understand, how could it be that there's a vision of the mighty Malchus of the world, and Yishmael is not there? Malchus Yishmael is the strongest and most mighty Malchus in the world. This is the Ibn Ezra was living in the 1100s, and at that time, certainly, you know, he came out, it's interesting, that Ibn Ezra was a very unique figure in the Tekuvos HaRishonim. He was a big traveler, and he actually went back and forth between the Muslim world and the Christian world. But he started in the Muslim world and he ended in the Christian world. He started and ended in the Muslim world. He visited the Christian world in between. But it was definitely true geographically in terms of how much territory the Muslim Empire at that time was bigger than the Christian world. And
the Ottoman Empire, meaning that
this is before Ottomans. No, this is long before the Ottomans. Mm-hmm. The Ottomans is, you know, I guess Muslim. The most one of the later iterations of the Muslim Empire. But this is, I think maybe it was called the Abbasid or Umayyad, I'm not sure, in terms of the Ibn Ezra, one of those. But it was, maybe there was both, maybe, you know, because there's probably more than one head of this big, big Muslim empire. But the empire itself stretched through, you know, the whole southern part of Asia and the whole Middle East and the whole northern part of Africa. And it included Spain also in Europe. So it was really very mighty. And the Ibn Ezra said, it can't be that Daniel had a vision of the great Malchus of the world and it didn't include Yishmael. So I say that the fourth Chaya, which is described in Daniel as being, the expression is im soni v'takifa udchila yaseira. I think that's the lashon, frightening and terrifying and very mighty and powerful. Says that's Malchus Yishmael. That can't describe anybody but Malchus Yishmael. I said, then where does Rome go? Rome, Edom, so that's not schwer, because Rome was really connected with Yavon. The two of them, you know, one grew out of the other. It's you know, it's true if you study history, and it's also Mefurish in the Gemara, like that Malchus Yishmael, the origin of Malchus Yishmael is described as Italia Shel Yavon. Italia, of course, is, right, we all understand geographically that Italia is connected with Rome. And Italia is called Italia Shel Yavon, meaning originally it was a small part of the Greek Empire. Yavon is Greece. So Rome was originally part of the Greek Empire, and then eventually they got the upper hand. They became the biggest name in the empire. So the Ibn Ezra says it's kind of like the same empire, just got renamed. It used to be the Greek Empire, then the control of it switched from one city to another city, and now it's the Roman Empire, but it's really the same empire. So that's the third Chaya. The third was, which everyone calls Yavon, I say that's Yavon and Rome. And the fourth one, that's Yishmael. That's what the Ibn Ezra says. The Ramban responds to that and says, it's not, his main objection is that it's against Chazal. Chazal say that in the Midrashim, that the fourth Malchus, that's Techili Yaseira and Emsoni and Takifa, right? That's Malchus Raimi. Not Malchus Yishmael. Chazal never mentioned Malchus Yishmael. So it's not on the list. The Ramban even says that, it's a little bit of a sharp lashon, that Ibn Ezra did what he sort of violated the first rule of a commentator, and that is that he allowed his own personal experience to affect how he was interpreting the Pesukim. And he says that Rabbi Avraham ben Ezra was nafal pachtam aleihem, nafal pachtam alav ma'id. He himself had very strong experiences in his encounter with Yishmael. So he said, how could it be that it's not part of the Mara of Daniel? But the Ramban says, I'll tell you the pshat. Because he says, you know, with all due respect to the Yishmaelim, and it's a very mighty Malchus, he says, you know what? There's faraway places like India, where they also have a very mighty Malchus. And how come that's not in the Mara of Daniel? Teretz is because it's not related to Jewish history. The world is a big place, and there's Malchus, there's empires in all sorts of places, but they're not related to Jewish history. What Daniel was seeing was, now this is a little bit tricky, because obviously at this time when Ibn Ezra and the Ramban are writing, Yishmael is related to Jewish history. I mean, most of the Jews of the world lived under Yishmael. But look at the Ramban, I'll tell you what the Mara of Daniel is really about. It starts off with the Beis HaMikdash. It starts off with, in fact, in the Pesukim, it refers to the Kedosh Elyon, that the Chaya, the Mara saw the Chaya come and devour the Kedosh Elyon. So that refers to Bavel, who came and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So then the succeeding Chayas, those that came in, you started off with Bavel, they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and who took the Malchus from Bavel, and then who took that Malchus from the one that took it from Bavel, who took that Malchus from the one that took it from them. It has to start with Bavel, because they're the ones that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and then who did they hand it over to, and they handed it over to, and they handed it over to. And that sequence, Yishmael is not part of that sequence. Yishmael, they conquered a bunch of pagans on the Arabian Peninsula, and that's how they established their Malchus. But those tribes in Arabia that they conquered had no shaykhs to the people that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. That was Nebuchadnezzar's Malchus. And he had a grandson, Belshazzar, who was assassinated by the Parasumadai people in Achashverosh Chevra. So they're the Malchusins. They took over from Babel. They defeated Babel. So they're the second Malchus. And they were defeated by Yavon. So Yavon is the third Malchus. And they were defeated by Raimi. So they're the fourth Malchus in the sequence that starts with Bavel, because they destroyed the first place of Mikdash. And since Yishmael is not part of that sequence, they're not part of the Mara of Daniel. So the Ramban says you have to leave them out of it. They're not part of the Mara of Daniel at all. So we have so far two opinions. The Ibn Ezra and the Ramban, and really, you know, between the two of them, the Ramban is the more prominent, you know, certainly when we're having discussions about our Amunah and our Deyos, the Ramban is a much more prominent, influential, authoritative voice than the Ibn Ezra, and he's supported by the Mamari Chazal. And he says that Yishmael is no shaykhus to the four Malchus of Daniel. But then there's a very interesting Maral who adds something to the discussion. The Maral says that while he doesn't agree with Ibn Ezra, incidentally, he never does. The Maral didn't like Ibn Ezra. But he says he doesn't agree with Ibn Ezra, but he thinks that there may be some merit to his argument that you can't leave Yishmael out. He talks about the Kasha. He talks about the Ibn Ezra's Kasha, that where's Yishmael? Yishmael is such a mighty Malchus. Why isn't he there in the Maris of Daniel? And he says, he does first say that maybe it's not, you know, such a Kasha. Like the Ramban says, he doesn't belong there. Even if he's a big Malchus, he doesn't belong in there. But then he says, on second thought, and he introduces the following. He says, there's a very important Gemara at the beginning of Masechet Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah daf Beis Amud Beis. Which, it's a famous, well-known Gemara, but the Maral says, I want to focus on a certain aspect of the Gemara that's maybe not what it's most well-known for. The Gemara over there says that Baruch Hu is going to bring in the Umay Sa'ilam and demand from them a reckoning. So it describes how he's going to bring in Malchus Raimi, and he's going to say, Bameh Asaktem. What did you do with yourselves? You had such a mighty Malchus. What did you do with yourselves? And they're going to say, Harbe Shavakim Tikananu. We made so many marketplaces. Harbe Merchatsois Baninu. We built so many bathhouses. Harbe Kesef Vizahav Hirbinu. And we produced great wealth. And then they're going to add, V'kulam Le'asinu El V'shvil Yisrael Sheyesh V'yaski B'Torah. And the whole purpose of the whole thing was so that Yidden should be able to learn Torah. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, Shaitim Sheba Olam, everything that you did for yourself and not for Yisrael. And that's going to be their interview. And then the Gemara says that Malchus Paras is going to come. And Hashem is going to say, Bamasaktim, what were you busy with? And they're also going to list their accomplishments. And they're going to say, Harbe Gasharnu, we built so many bridges. Harbe Milchamos Asinu, we made so many wars. Harbe Korachim Kavashnu, we conquered so many metropolises. And all that we did for Kal Yisrael, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to tell them, Shaitim Sheba Olam, everything that you did for your own honor and benefit, and you don't get any credit for it. Now, the famous part of the Gemara is the way it's said over, usually, is that the Gemara tells how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to ask everybody about Ma'a Saktim, and they're going to list their accomplishments, and they're going to claim that it was all Bishvil Yisrael, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to tell them, no. Agav, there's a very beautiful verse from the Briska Rav. The Briska Rav, on that Gemara, the Briska Rav says, what do you mean they're going to come and they're going to say to the Rav Shalom, we did it b'shvil Yisrael. B'achas HaYamim, in their interview with the Rav Shalom, they're going to tell a bold-faced lie, they did it b'shvil Yisrael. Briska Rav says, the pshat on the Gemara is, it's not a lie at all. It's really at that time that Krevi Shuasi Lavi V'Sikasi Lihi Galais, when the whole plan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu becomes revealed, and everybody's going to realize that the things that happened in world history were designed for the benefit of Klal Yisrael, so then it's going to emerge that all of these Shvakim and Merchat Soyes that they made were for the benefit of Klal Yisrael, and all of these Gesharim and Muhammads that they made were for the benefit of Klal Yisrael. So they're going to come and say, look, we did all these things that Klal Yisrael benefited from. Don't we get credit for that? To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, Shetim Shabbat Olam, if you only would have had in mind, if that would have been your intention, you'd get credit. But now, even though it's true that those things that, you know, that I brought about through your agency were for the benefit of Klal Yisrael, but you were Mechavim for that, so you don't get credit for it. And that's the var from the Briska Rav. But Al Kaponim, the Gemara is known for the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, Bama Asaktim, and they're going to claim, they're going to try to get credit, they helped Klal Yisrael. But the Maral says, let's focus, though, on the specifics of what they say when they're asked by Ma'a Saktim. And you'll notice that they give very different answers. The Malchus Roimi says, Harbe Shavakim Tikananu, Harbe Mechatzois Asinu, Harbe Kesef Zahav Hirbinu. While Malchus Paras is going to say, Harbe Gesharim Gesharinu, Harbe Mechamois Asinu, Harbe Kirachos Kavashnu. So what that tells me is that these malchios are not just different, you know, different kings and different kingdoms, but they're different cultures with different values. Each one has different values, different things that they're machshav as what's really important. So when we go about defining the malchios, the arba malchios of, you know, of historical significance, we're not just looking for genetically, ethnically, what's, you know, Paras means the Persians, and Roimi means the Romans, and Yavan means the Greeks. Each one represents a culture. And then if other people buy into that culture and buy into those values, then that's part of the Malchus that Daniel was talking about. Paras is one of the Malchus, and everyone agrees that Paras is one of the four Malchus in Daniel's vision. The first was Bavel, and then the second is Paras Umadai. So right, they're put together, but let's call that Paras for argument's sake. And then the third is Yavin, the fourth is Edom, Raimi. But the number two of the four is Paras. Now Paras maybe, you know, is a nation from the ancient world that's either gone or maybe already not so significant in the times of the Maral. But once we understand that these represent really cultures and values, so the Malchus of Paras, which by nowadays is Akhtar Maral writing in the 1500s, they're a Muslim country. So Paras is Muslims, is Islam. Now, there's a billion Muslims in the world, and most of them are not Persian, but they all share Islam. They all subscribe to the same value system. So that makes them part of the Paras of the vision of Daniel. So now Zakhtar Maral, the Ben Ezra wanted to know, where's Yishmael in the vision of Daniel? He's number two. He's Malchus Paras. Malchus Paras, once upon a time, it just meant Paras. But once Muhammad came along and his followers you know, established their religion over a large part of the world, including Persia, Iran. So now Paras of Daniel's vision is the Muslim world. So yes, they are in the Mar of Daniel, and is the, you know, that I guess reinstates them into the nevuahs and visions about the Achras Hayamim. So this Maral has a very significant payoff that it allows us to see the Bnei Yishmael in Mamari Chazal. There are no Mamari Chazal about Yishmael, or very few. Again, we did mention that Medrash in Lech Lecha, but it's unusual to find Mamari Chazal about Yishmael as a nation in current events. But there's lots of Mamari Chazal about Paras. And the Maral says, Paras and Yishmael, we could look at them as one because culturally and in terms of values, they're the same.
What do the other two mafia say they did?
They're not mentioned in that Gemara. That Gemara just mentioned those two. Mm-hmm. Now, if we just look again at what those lists were of the accomplishments, it's very striking that if we try to categorize it a little bit, because now that we've said that Roimi represents the Christian world, right, which nowadays I guess we would say is the Western world, and Paras now represents the Muslim world, which is kind of I don't know if we could say the two worlds of today. I mean, it leaves out China and the whole Far East, but
it's
certainly the two very very significant parts of current events and very significant world powers. And the Gemara there is saying that if we go back and examine the Gemara's description of their values and their culture, that Roimi says when they're asked by Ma'asakhtem, they say we made markets, we made bathhouses, and we amassed fortunes. The values of that world, the way the Gemara seems to be describing it, is to make money, to build an economy, and produce a better standard of living, a more comfortable standard of living. That's, I think, what the Merchatzois alludes to. Creature comforts, to live more comfortably, enjoy life, and have a good economy, and be able to make a living, and have a prosperous society. When Hashem asked Paras by Ma'asakhtem, they didn't say a word about that. They talked about Melchamos Asinu, Karachim Kavashnu, and they also said Gesharim Gasharnu, right? That we built a lot of bridges, but I think in the context with the other two, I would say bridges being a symbol of expansion, meaning we expanded outwards, we conquered more territory. That's all part of describing how they conquered more territory. It seems like the Gemara is saying that the values of the Muslim world are quite different than the values of the Christian world, and ironically, that pasuk was said to Esav, not to Yishmael.
Was
Esav, but yeah, this Gemara seems to be saying that to them, what's most important is winning a war, fighting a war, even if just for the sake of fighting the war, and expanding and conquering territory, much more important than improving their standard of living. Which I think is very interesting because I think, you know, just in current events and in politics, a lot of times you'll hear statements from leaders in the Western world that they're convinced that deep down everyone wants the same thing. If you'll just give them the opportunity, mm-hmm. what everyone really wants is to be able to enjoy life with their family and their children and build a better life for their, for the future and you know, get an education so that they can get a good job. And if we find that sometimes a society is acting violently, it's only because they're oppressed and they're having a hard time. But if we'll take away the oppression, we'll give them peace. You'll see they'll just want to prosper just like us. And the Gemara is saying that is a very flawed assumption. That there's such a thing as values of a society, of a culture. And the values of that society are quite different than the values of the society. And the idea of, you know, that what we want above all is to make a living and be comfortable is a Western value, and it never really held true in the Muslim world. That's an interesting takeaway from that Gemara in Avodah Zarah. There's another Gemara. Well, you know what? There's Dubai, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Dubai. Yeah. Anachanami. Right. You sometimes see very exceptions to this. Rich. That's true.
Exceptions. Well, oil. Everything is oil.
Okay. But you know what? Saddam Hussein in Iraq also had oil, right? With ISIS and all that.
Oil.
So,
oil.
Yeah, but,
Libya.
I'm saying
ISIS.
Dubai is an interesting exception, but I don't think, you know, the whole oil, the fact that there's oil shows the whole exception. Adra, but they've had oil for a long time, and basically all they've done is fight wars. I think there's a very interesting Rambam to put together with this maral on the Gemara of Zarah Daf Beis. The Rambam, I mentioned before, the Rambam lived during one of the periods of exception where life was really bad under the Muslims. He himself bore the brunt of it quite personally. When he was 10 years old, country was overrun by the Almohads, and then he spent the next couple of decades really on the run, you know, with his life in danger, and saw a lot of people around him either get killed or get forced into conversions. And then eventually, when he was about 27 years old, he escaped from them by coming first to Eretz Yisrael and then to Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, you know, it was a Muslim country, but Mitzrayim the Almohads never conquered. So the Rambam was safe in Mitzrayim. But in his formative years, he experienced the Almohad oppression. And also during his lifetime, there was in Yemen, now Yemen is, you know, very far away, and it was different tribes. The Almohads were not relevant over there, different sects in Yemen, but there was a sect that was pretty similar to the Almohads that was gaining power in Yemen and being very violently oppressive to the Jews there. And the Jews of Yemen sent a letter to the Rambam asking for his chizuk and support and etzah and hadracha. And he wrote a letter which is called the Igeres Taiman, one of the classic letters of the Rambam. And in there he writes one thing that's very interesting. At the beginning of this whole parsha that we're finding ourselves in, with the Muhammad and Eretz Yisrael, a day or two after Yom Tif, when we had a gathering in our shul for Tehillim, so I mentioned a small point from this Igeres of the Rambam, where the Rambam over there talks about a certain kapitel of Tehillim. Right? One of the kapitels that we say in our shul is kapitel Kuf Chaf, which is not really one of the very widespread popular ones to say, but kapitel Kuf Chaf, which has a start, but El Hashem Batzarasali Karasi Vayaneni. It's the first Shiramalas. Shiramalas, I think that's the first pasuk. And the Rambam writes in his Igeres Taiman, he says, you're having trouble with Muslims. Well, there's a kapitel in Tehillim which David HaMelech wrote, Baruch Kodshei, specifically targeting the tzaris that Yidden are going to have with Muslims. Hmm. And that is kapitel Kufchaf. Why does Rambam say that this is about the Muslims? Because there's a pasuk in there where it says, "Oyali kigarti meshech shachanti im ahale kedar." Kedar is Kedar ben Yishmael. The Rambam says that according to his research of the genealogy, the Meshuga, which is what he calls Muhammad, the Meshuga was from the Bnei Kedar. Kedar ben Yishmael, right? There's different tribes of Bnei Yishmael, Kedar being one of them. And the Meshuga was from Kedar. So when David HaMelech wrote, "Oyali, woe is me, kigarti meshach," that I've had such a long sojourn, such a long period of living together, "shachanti im ale kedar," that I was a neighbor with the tents of Kedar, he was envisioning the time that the Jews would be living with the Muslims, and it would be very, very hard for them. So that's the kapitel about tzaris with Arabs, with Muslims. And that's why I think it's a very appropriate kapitel to say now. But I think it's very kedai to take a look at what's the next pasuk in that kapitel. It says, "Ayoli kigarti meshach shachanti male kedar." Oh, first, what does it say before that? El Hashem batzarasli karasi vayaneni hatsila nafshi mitzvas sheker. Mitzvas sheker lashon remia. That's the beginning of the kapitel pasuk. Beis with gimel, it refers to the svas sheker lashon remia. So David HaMelech was saying, according to the Rambam, that one of the tchunais that characterizes this nation when we are in conflict with them is trickery, dishonesty, duplicitousness, right? Falsehood, svash sheker, lashon remiya. And I think even more striking, what it says at the end of the kapitel is, what's the pasuk that ends im seinei shalom? I don't remember the
beginning.
Thank you. Rabbas shachna la nafshi im seinei shalom. For too long have I been residing with those that are seinei shalom, hate peace. Mm-hmm. And then the last pasuk says, "Ani shalom v'chi adaber heimal amelchama." I am for peace, but when I speak, when I try to speak to someone, there's no one to speak to. They just want war. These psukim are in a perek that the Rambam writes in Igeres Taimon is talking about the Arabs. It was talking about conflict that Klal Yisrael has with the Arabs. "Ani shalom v'chi adaber heimal amelchama." It ties in very nicely with this Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which the Gemara is talking about Malchus Paras. But the Maral says Malchus Paras, that's really Yishmael. Yishmael is Malchus Paras in Chazal. And over there it says, "Bama saktem," they said, we fought a lot of wars. We conquered a lot of territory. That's our accomplishment. That's our value. That's our culture. That dovetails with what it says in this kapitel, which the Rambam says is a description of our Muhammad against Amalek. Against Ishmael. Okay, yeah.
You're getting our enemies
confused. So Yitzchak is asking about, what about the Chazal say, that Ishmael said Shuvah, so there's a beautiful Mashachachma. We'll do this very quickly. But there's a beautiful Mashachachma. You know, it says about a lot of things in Bereishis, Ma'isei Avosim and Levanim. So we usually think of those as the things that happened to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It's Ma'isei Avosim and Levanim. The Mashachachma says that on that which Chazal say, that Avram Avinu was promised a Seva Toiva, and Chazal say that the Seva Toiva of Avram Avinu was Neskayim, in that Ishmael was Aset Shuva, that like we find that when they were burying Avram Avinu, Yishmael allowed Yitzchak to go ahead of him because he was a tzaddik. You see over there that Yishmael was Aset Shuva, and that's the Seva Toiva of Avram Avinu. Meshech Chochma says this too is a Maisi of a similar banim, that a Sidim Banu of Lasis Shuva. What's the Shuva? He says very nicely that all the nations were Ovdei Kachavim Azalos and Eitzim Va'avanim. And then as time went on, various nations came a little bit closer, sort of made progress in their religion. And the one that made more progress than anyone else is the B'nai Yishmael. Because in the 600s of the Common Era, they adopted this new religion. And their religion is true monotheism. And so if you remember that Sarah said, I'm looking at these two children playing together, right? She said that I see Yishmael mitzachek im b'ni im Yitzchak, and Rashi over there says that mitzachek is the lashon of avodah zarah, gilui ra'is, and shvichas damim. Zok l'meshech chachma, but the avodah zarah was taken away. It's still gilui ra'is, there's still shvichas damim, but the avodah zarah was taken away. Many thousands of years later, that's the Asid Yishmael Lassis Shuva, that eventually is going to come a time that his malchus, his religion, is not avodah zarah. And by contrast, he points out that the Gemara Megillah, where it says that Yitzchak was praying that Esav should also come to a tshuva, and he was told no. The Gemara, the bottom of Vav Amud Aleph in Megillah, that the Gemara's darshan in the pasuk in Yeshaya, Yuchan Rasha Balam et Tzedek. And the Gemara over there describes it as a dialogue between Yitzchak and the Rebbeinu Shlomo. Yitzchak says, let Esav also have some kind of a redemption. And Hashem says, no. That's basically what the Gemara says. So the Mashech Chachma says that what he meant was that just like Yishmael is going to come to a monotheistic religion, can't Esav do that too? And Hashem tells him no. And what it means is, because the Rambam says, and this Rambam, it's hard to find. You know, you'd think that it would be in one of the like machshavadika places in his writings. It's in Hilchas Macholes Asurais. The Rambam says that whereas Islam is a true monotheistic religion and is not considered Avodah Zarah, but Christianity is not. Even though Christianity is also a step towards monotheism, and they might identify themselves as monotheistic, but their belief in the Trinity is a pircha on monotheism. So the Rambam says, halacha l'maisa, that if somebody that follows the Dasi Yishmaeli touches wine, It does not become Asr Bahana. It's Asr to drink, but it's not Asr Bahana. But somebody from the Das HaNeitzrim touches the wine. That's why it's in Machalas Asurais. Somebody from the Das HaNeitzrim touches wine. That wine is Asr Bahana. Because the Christian religion is considered Avodah Zarah, but the Muslim religion is not. Oh. Zok the Meshech Chachma, that's the Asad Yishmar Alasis Tshuva.
Basically, what we do, it's all.